Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truth and possibly even the myths of the people and events that have created the Sunshine City. Thanks for tuning in today. My name is Rui Frias, and I have one of the coolest jobs in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. The museum has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for 102 years, and now we're incredibly happy to share those stories with you here on Radio St. Pete. So growing up in St. Petersburg, and always a history geek, of course, some of my fondest memories were spending hours climbing through the brush and exploring Whedon Island. This was long before it was transformed into a fantastic county park. Of course, you know, growing up here, we've heard all about and we searched for, you know, the buried pirate treasure that we dug for years and never found. A buried box of gold coins from a 1920s Tampa bank robbery, a witch's grave, monkeys that remained in the trees from filming Tarzan movies. These are all things that we heard over the years, a long forgotten airport, and of course, native artifacts. We now know, obviously, that Whedon Island has this long and spectacular history, and today's guest will hopefully set us straight on some of the myths that I wanted to believe so very long ago. So I'd like to welcome today's guest, Dr. Robert Austin. Bob has a PhD in anthropology from the University of Florida and has been part of the Whedon Island history for decades. Welcome, Bob. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little about yourself. How did you venture into this realm of the world?
Well, like you, I grew up in St. Pete and tromped around Whedon Island when I was younger and picked up artifacts while I was out there. And that kind of contributed to my interest in archaeology. I actually got a BA in English from USF and then was out of school for a while before going back and getting my master's at USF and then eventually my PhD at the University of Florida. So I've always been, although my career was primarily in the private sector doing consulting work for projects that required cultural resources and archaeology, I've always been interested in Pinellas County and St. Pete. And when I, well, near my retirement, I got involved with AWARE, which we can talk about a little bit later. But and now that I am retired, I'm out there pretty much full-time working on Whedon Island and also other sites in the area.
Excellent. So, I mean, Whedon Island, is famous for its natural beauty and, of course, its archaeological treasures, but also has a bit of a, I don't want to say spicy, but a bit of a spicy history, right? So there was a movie studio there, a nightclub, right. Airports, a seaplane airport, I guess, if that's what you want to call it.
Right.
And if it had been up to a developer and schemer by the name of Eugene Elliott, it would have been a neighborhood today, right?
Right.
So
correct.
Give us a little bit of history about Whedon Island.
Well, the recent history, I think that you've kind of touched on what most people know. If they know anything about the history of Whedon Island, they know about, of course, Leslie Whedon, who was a doctor who kind of retired and owned that property early on, and he's the person that the island is named for, and he had a vacation home out there with his wife. Actually, it was given to them as her father who gave it to them as a wedding gift. And eventually he divested himself of the property, and Elliot acquired it. And you're correct, he really wanted to make it into a high-end residential community. He wanted to call it Riviera on the Bay, which is why Pappy's Bayou is now called Riviera Bay. And Pappy's Bayou was named after an early fisherman settler out there. And then his efforts did not go well. He had some financial difficulties, eventually divested the property. And there were many attempts to try and make some sort of development out there. And there was a speakeasy, there was a movie studio, there was a small airport. And all those things went on up into the middle of the 20th century. Eventually, luckily, none of that really happened. Now, there was some buildings out there, and the remains of those buildings are still out there. But large-scale development really did not occur, and that's fortunate because eventually the county was able to acquire large tracts of land out there. The state also owns large tracts of land, and what was at one time Florida Power and then Progress Energy and now Duke Energy have a power plant out there, which is mostly constructed on fill, so that didn't disturb any of the archaeological historical stuff. But those three entities own the 3,500 acres that make up Weedon Island Preserve.
And, of course, I mean, back in the day, there used to be a bridge, right, that
right.
connected
mm-hmm.
Weedon Island with what I guess would be the part of Shore Acres or
yeah.
close to Shore
mm-hmm.
Acres.
Mm-hmm.
That bridge got taken up by a storm, if I remember correctly. Was there ever any talk of replacing the bridge?
I believe there was. I had always thought that the bridge burned or whatever. But, yes, there was some talk about replacing it. And I'm not 100% sure exactly why they never did. But right now, it's where the fishing pier is out there and where
right.
people launch their kayaks and canoes.
Right. Well, I mean,
I think it was there up into the 70s, I believe, because I remember going out there.
I remember when I was a kid seeing it. So, yeah,
yeah
I think
yeah.
you're right. I think it was the 70s. I mean, you know, luckily for us, right, and luckily for the community, Elliot, you know, did fail. So I think his original plan was to, like you said, turned it into the Riviera on the bay, but mm-hmm. he was going to compete with Perry Snell and built his
yeah,
own version
yeah.
of Snell Isle out there, right?
Right.
But there are people who live out there. I mean, a friend of mine in high school actually lived in one of those still homes that's
oh,
right on the
yeah,
water's edge.
Yes. And there's several little islands off the main island, Ross Island, Big Island. All those places had little homesteads on them well into the 60s and probably into the 70s as well. So,
well, let's talk about the history of excavation there on Weedon Island, and I guess most famously is the Smithsonian dig there in the 1920s. Share that a little bit of that with us.
Correct. I mean, the Weedon Island for archaeologists and historians too, I think, is most famous because of the archaeological site, the prehistoric or pre-contact archaeological site out there, which is listed on the National Register. It takes up most of Weedon Island itself, which really isn't an island, but that's what everybody calls it. But the archaeological remains all over that area, and it was brought to the attention of professional archaeologists because of the extraordinarily well-made, beautiful pottery that was found in burial context out there. And the Smithsonian, actually it's kind of a funny story, because Elliot, in his attempts to garner publicity for his proposed development, decided that having an archaeological site out there might bring in a bunch of people who might want to live in that area. So he buried some archaeological artifacts out there, which I don't remember exactly where they came from, but they were nowhere near Florida, probably from Mexico or South America or something, and called the Smithsonian, and Jesse Walter Fuchs came down, and pretty quickly realized, no, these aren't from here. And but while he was digging around out there, he found artifacts that were from there, and he did recognize as being probably locally produced and much different from what Elliot had out there. And that spurred his interest to come down and do an excavation, not only in the burial mound, which gets all the publicity, but he also did some excavation in some other areas of the site. And he also produced what is probably the best, most accurate topographic map of the island, which shows many of the features that are still there, including the location of where the burial mound was and other mounds. Some of the burial mounds, other mounds are destroyed, but most of the midden areas, most of the living areas, are still there, and portions of the burial mound are still there as well.
So you're saying if it wasn't for a typical Florida real estate scheme,
right.
We wouldn't have known all of this?
Probably.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a perfect Florida story.
It is.
So I mean, what are some of the things that I know that you guys have found? I mean, a few years back, that 40-foot, I think it was 40-foot canoe
yeah.
that was
mm-hmm.
dug out.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the just cool, amazing things that you guys have found?
Well, yeah, and one thing to make note of is that Fuchs's Smithsonian excavations were extremely influential, and that was the basis for archaeologists later on to define what's called the Weedon Island culture, which actually wasn't so much a culture per se, the way that anthropologists and archaeologists talk about it, but it was really more of a mortuary tradition, how people treated their dead. which spread all over the Southeast and actually, ironically, did not originate at Whedon Island. It originated in southwestern Georgia and radiated out from there. It's just that it was first identified at Whedon Island, so hence it got the name. But since...
is it true that the Smithsonian dig, I read somewhere that it was one of the, if not one of the largest native dig at that time in America?
Yeah. Well, and definitely in the Southeast, yes, okay. yes. And archaeology was really still in its relative infancy back there. So, for that time period, it was a major, major excavation, and particularly in the Southeast. And definitely in Florida.
And I know that because we had this discussion with some folks just pre-COVID, that there was some talk about reaching out. And I know we reached out to the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been like 2018, 2019.
Right.
About possibly locating some of those artifacts that were removed and are at the Smithsonian to bring them back to display them in the museum.
Well, yeah, and that. Yes, that has been a goal, not just of AWARE, but of the county and Whedon Island for some time. That was the most recent effort to try to do that. There are other issues which we can go into if you want, but the biggest stumbling block of the most recent attempt to do that is the concerns of Native Americans about displaying mortuary items to the public.
Correct.
So at this point, it's unlikely that that's going to happen, simply because the Smithsonian and AWARE and the county are sensitive to their concerns.
And so the items, though, that they have, and I saw pictures of mm-hmm. probably maybe a half a dozen pots that were just gorgeous, in unbelievable shape. So those are at the artifacts?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. And those are at the Smithsonian.
Right. Okay. So can you talk about the approach or the focus, how the focus of archaeological digs, how have they changed over the years?
I think that after Fuchs, there was really no work of any professional type of work done at Whedon Island. In the 1960s, the Florida State Museum, which is now the Florida Museum of Natural History, came down and did small excavation in the midden near the burial site. But beyond that, there really hasn't been anything until AWARE and the University of South Florida got involved in the early 2000s to try and figure out something about the site as a whole, not just the burial and ceremonial aspects of Whedon Island culture, which of course has been studied all over the Southeast mm-hmm. since the 20s, of course. But the goal really, and again, in response to concerns about digging and burial sites, the focus has been more on trying to understand the day-to-day lives of the people who participated in that Native culture and the cultures that preceded and also succeeded Whedon Island, which there's evidence for those at Whedon Island as well. So it's really, really been more of an emphasis on the domestic sphere, how their economic system worked, who they exchanged with. Their exchange system spread all over the Southeast. So getting information and understanding those aspects of indigenous culture at that time has been the big focus since the early 2000s.
So basically it's a shift in translating it into knowledge, right?
What we use
that information. So, yes. We've been talking about some of the pieces that have been excavated there at Whedon Island. What time period are we talking about?
Well, the time period that the Whedon Island phenomenon, we'll call it that, was active at Whedon Island was right around probably AD 400 up until about AD 1000. And of course, things varied through that time as they do.
Sure.
But the use of burial mounds with these ornate pots and the ceremonies and rituals that went along with those appears to have been active during that time. Now, one of the things that we have learned since the early 2000s is that the Whedon Island component out there, despite the fact that the site itself is several hundred acres, the Whedon Island component appears, of course, we've only investigated small percentages of it, but what we have investigated and the radiocarbon dates that we have suggest that the Whedon Island component out there was probably pretty small, pretty restricted in space compared to the larger site. A much larger component, implying a little bit larger population, succeeded the people who participated in Whedon Island.
Okay.
And it's what archaeologists call Safety Harbor, again, because that's where they were first, the material culture was first identified.
Right.
And those are the people who were, or the descendants of the Whedon Island people, are the people who were here when the Spanish came and who we called the Tocobaga.
Okay.
And that was all the way up from about 1000 AD until 1600. The mid-1600s, the Tocobaga abandoned the area and moved up to the area around the Ocilla River, in part because of the Spanish, but probably more so because of warfare and interaction with the Calusa from the south. Mm-hmm. And then pre-Whedon Island, there's thousands of years of history before Whedon Island that's also present out at Whedon Island.
Wow, fantastic. So why, in your opinion, why do you think it's important that we learn these things? How does this affect us today?
I think that there's, to me, and I guess I was trained this way when I was in college, that, you know, archaeology, and this all came about in the 60s, you know, where, you know, archaeologists wanted what they did to have some relevance to the modern day. And I think that it does in a couple of ways. One is, the most obvious, is that we learn something about people who are not us, who preceded us here. And unlike other parts of the world, I'm thinking of Europe in particular, where they have a very deep history and ancestral lineage that goes back hundreds and thousands of years, Euro-Americans are a relatively, in historical terms, a relatively recent introduction to North America, and the indigenous Native Americans have been here for many, many thousands of years. So there's not a direct link between us and them. So informing people and educating them about these cultures that were very unlike us, if they had not been interrupted by European invasion, probably would have developed into their own unique cultures, much like could have happened in Mexico and South America,
right.
And did happen over in Europe. So we learn about that. And then we also learn about how people interact with their environment in relatively sustainable ways. I think there's maybe sometimes too much emphasis placed on how indigenous people live so close to their environment and they're respectful of the environment, which is in fact true, but they're human beings and they exploited their environment to make a living and survive. So it's not that the environment was not exploited for their economic and other purposes, but they tended to do so in more sustainable ways than we do today. And one of the really interesting things that is an outgrowth of the recent research at Whedon Island is work in Tampa Bay looking at how Native peoples manipulated and controlled the bay environment and the estuaries to basically develop aquaculture and develop mm-hmm. their own ways of stimulating oyster growth in areas that would sustain it in ways that would be beneficial to them and would not destroy the environment. So there's a variety of things that can be learned about that we can use today that can be learned from the past.
And I had a conversation with folks from Tampa Bay Watch who had brought that up, that the Tocobaga, the natives that were there, were way ahead of the game when it came to that. So let's talk about Whedon Island today. So tell us what's out there. We know the Learning Center is out there. Tell us what a visitor can expect when they go out there.
Well, the visitor centers, the Whedon Island Cultural and Natural History Center, was built in its current form in around 2000, 2001. It's a really nice, it's a small facility, but it's really nice. And they have a very nice display in there of that integrates the natural environment with the indigenous people and the more recent history, because it's all interrelated. And there's a big focus on exploitation and enjoyment of the marine ecosystem out there, fishing, shell fishing, you know, that type of thing. And that was an attraction for, you know, your early Euro-Americans as well as the indigenous people. So there's that aspect, which is very nice. And, of course, there's some very nice kayak trails, hiking trails. There are historic remnants of the 20th century developments out there. There's typically at least twice a year during International Archaeology Day, which is in October, and then Archaeology Month, which is in March, we typically have hikes and walks around that show people these different historic archaeological features, as well as some of the Native American archaeological features out there. So it's quite a, I mean, I think it's a jewel to be here in such a heavily urbanized environment that you can go out there and get away from all that.
And I don't think a lot of people even realize, because, you know, you look at how many people take the shortcut, right, to Gandy?
Yeah, right.
83rd, and I think it's just a pass through to Gandy Boulevard, and they don't realize what's the treasure that's really out there.
Right.
And you're true. What you said is true, that in such an urban area,
we
have that there.
And so, it's easy to get there, right, off of 83rd.
Right, exactly.
And it's free.
Exactly.
I mean, there's no charge to go in there, and it's just a beautiful place.
So tell us a little bit about AWARE. What is AWARE?
AWARE is an acronym that stands for Alliance for Whedon Island Archaeological Research and Education, and which is a mouthful, but it basically explains what it is we do, research, education, and then there's this public outreach portion of it. And it was, we were incorporated in 2008, and the original concept was not so much for AWARE to do research out there, but to provide the infrastructure and opportunities to facilitate research by others, particularly students in the Tampa Bay area. We have several universities and colleges here who are doing research in Tampa Bay, and this is a natural outgrowth of that. And then also in the larger Tampa Bay region in general. So are basically the area that we call our service area includes Pinellas, Hillsborough, Pasco, Manatee, Sarasota County. It's that larger Tampa Bay area. So so what we have done is we have a building out there that the county has graciously allowed us to occupy, and we have a lab facility out there. We've got living facilities for researchers to come in and stay when they're doing research in the area. So we have our own research, which is ongoing, but we also have a grants program that gives grants to students, graduate students who are doing research in the area, which has been going on for the past 5 years. We have camps for kids and for adults to be able to come out and have hands-on experience in archaeology, and especially for understanding how archaeology is done, how we do what we do, how we learn about the past based on what we do. We have lecture series. We have other programs. We are just starting a research program, which we just got a grant for, to explore Tampa Bay for submerged, very, very early sites. The earliest occupation of the Tampa Bay area, we feel, is now submerged under Tampa Bay.
And that's fantastic.
That's based on artifacts that have been dredged up from the various dredging projects over the years, the channelization projects, and marine geologists who have done coring and remote sensing out there and identified submerged lakes, the ancestral Hillsborough River, old sinkholes, all of which would have been attractions for people and animals. So that is just underway now.
I was going to say, when does that begin?
Yeah, we're just starting now. We just got the grant money this past summer, and we're underway and pulling together all the existing information, and then the next step will be to go out and do coring and send divers down to try and find the actual site.
Because I mean, I think I heard an event from an event, and I think it was actually you that was speaking, that said that, you know, if you really want to find the coolest stuff, artifacts, that you've got to go diving off the coast. Right?
Well, you do have to, yeah. Right. I mean, when the part of it is because of the preservation that is involved.
Correct.
And that's, you know, Florida is so humid and the soils are so acidic that it's really hard to have anything of any kind of organic nature, clothing, baskets, wood, any of that kind of stuff preserved. We mostly have stone tools, pottery sherds, sometimes some bone, but, you know, most of the time. So you really need what's called an anaerobic environment where there's no oxygen for the little critters to get in mm-hmm. there and the bacteria to eat all that stuff up. So Florida is noted around the world as having lots of submerged sites, but most of them have been found in the interior in lakes,
nice.
Rivers.
Gotcha.
But now we're exploring offshore because sea level has risen, you know, 100 feet or whatever over, or, you know, inundated the coastline mm-hmm. for quite a bit since the end of the Pleistocene 18,000 years ago. So there was open landscape out there that is now submerged where we know that there were very, very early sites. And so that's the new frontier.
So you mentioned the camps for kids and adults, which is incredibly intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Are there any other opportunities for people, like volunteer opportunities for people to get involved out there at Whedon Island if they want to?
Yeah, we have a lab, and we have volunteers in our lab. We also have an internship program, which I forgot to mention, with the University of South Florida. So we have interns in there during the school year as well. But anybody can volunteer to come out, and we usually put people in the lab right away to get them give them a feel for what archaeology consists of. Maybe 10 or 15% of it is out in the field, and the rest of the time is in the lab. Mm-hmm. So we want to give them an idea of what that encompasses and why we excavate the way we do. And in Florida, summer times are not the greatest time to be out digging.
What?
So, yeah, right. So we try to have the camps in the fall and winter when the weather's nice.
Gotcha.
But yeah, there's, you know, they go to our website. There's emails and ways to contact us and say, I'd like to volunteer, and then we'll figure out a way to do it.
Excellent. So final question. What is the coolest thing you've ever found out there?
Well, I think out there it's got to be the canoe that we found. Okay. And actually, we didn't find it. It was found by a couple of local residents who came to the center and told us about the canoe. And so, you know, we have to give props to them. And they've got a very nice award from the Florida Archaeological Council, Stewards of Heritage Award, because they could have gone out there and just dug it up themselves, in which case it would have been destroyed. But
I'm sure,
they didn't, and we were able to excavate and preserve that, and it's on display out at the Whedon Island Center.
Very nice. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be
on
here.
Historically St. Pete and sharing this amazing history with us. I'm inviting everyone to tune in weekly to RadioSt.Pete.com for this weekly podcast and to stop by the St. Pete Museum of History in your next visit to the pier and explore the rich and unique history of the Sunshine City. You can visit HistorySt.Pete.org for more details on our exhibits and our new historic trolley, segway, and boat tours. Thanks for listening, and join us next week on Historically St. Pete.